Welcome on a bumpy choo-choo train.
Locomotive and put together, composed by a very popular European DJ named Andrea Benigni, better known as Mop Mop. He is in, of course, he's from Italian descent. This is from his 2008 album, Kiss of Kali. This is Lead Stories. I'm Beatrice Lead. And it's Free Your Mind Friday. Well, look at that. If you've been following the news at all and the rhythm of the news, you see how far ahead we have been and still are in terms of looking at political developments. I talked about the fact that it appeared, if you just watched a little bit of it. You didn't have to watch the entire proceedings, but you could tell things were falling apart for the Democrats. And yesterday I see in the New York Times that things are falling apart with the Democrats. And this idea of impeachment is becoming a pipe dream. But it is Lead Stories, it is Free Your Mind Friday, and it is you deciding what is important, what you would like to talk about. And we start with Jay from New York. You're on the air.
Hello, Beatrice. How are you? I hope all is well, and I hope you had your mental soup yesterday. Listen.
Thank you.
The Democratic Party is a joke. A joke. A joke. A joke. They have no vision. They have no ideology. They have no purpose. They have nothing. They don't want to confront the Republicans for what they have done. And they definitely don't want to confront 45. The reality is this. Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer are friends of 45. They know 45. They've taken money from 45. The bottom line is Mueller, in his opening basically statement, said that 45 should be and could be indicted for collusion once he's out of office, and basically said to the United States people that the only reason I didn't indict him was because I'm dealing under the premise that you cannot indict a sitting president. So whereby with that right there, you're supposed to go for impeachment. Now, the only person it seems that's really holding up impeachment is Nancy Pelosi. For what reason? I don't really know. I have an idea. But the bottom line is, if she's doing it because she feels as though it may cause conflict and friction in the nation, then she out of her cotton picking mind. Because the bottom line is, you have a situation to whereas impeachment should move forward so that the reality of what this man has done could be used along with the proper messaging around the country to get this fool out of office. But if
we've covered this a lot. The question still is, and it's a fundamental question, the people cannot impeach the president. Technically, they could impeach him by voting him out of office in the next presidential election, but they have no power to impeach. Only Congress has the power to impeach. What? And Congress is going through its permutations at the moment, and we don't know how the final decision will be made. But it is already clear, and she has said it, she didn't just spring it on anybody, but she said this months ago, that she does not support impeachment. She considers it too fraught for the nation at this time. And she considers it a matter so grave that what if you go through the all of the I'm having some trouble here. There is a wasp who likes my nose. Okay. But what if you go through the whole business of impeachment and then it doesn't work? You now have the added burden of stitching the nation back together. So there are all kinds of opinions about
it. Where you're wrong at, Utrice, where you're wrong at is when you say if it don't work. The reality is with...
But I didn't say so.
No, but
what
I'm just
said
saying...
Is that this is Nancy Pelosi's view.
Yeah, but the reality is that if he will be impeached in the Congress, and more than likely, he won't be impeached in the Senate, but he still will have an impeachment in one body on record that if it's used properly, you can expose the man for who and what he is. She's not even taking that opportunity
to do that.
But let me ask
you, you are restating things we've already covered. This is not news. Give me something new, a new take on everything that you're presenting right now. What's new?
Well, there's really no new take other than the fact that these so-called leaders won't go ahead with what needs to be done in regards to moving the country forward, or we can take it to another level and let's say going forward and trying to set up some sort of agenda that will allow for the country to be able to put forward a new path.
Like you don't know how politics works. It takes time. The next presidential election is in 2020. We're literally bumping up against it right now. Things take time. We have utter and complete confusion on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans, and we are in a place where nobody seems to have an answer, not a cogent answer or a rational answer as to what's the next move.
Well,
but we're not going to get anywhere repeating things that have already been discussed and examined. We are stuck. We need something new.
The next move should basically be, how do we get to the point to whereas we could change the messaging in this country in regards to 45 in his actions and the direction that he's taking.
Well, you get it, because messaging. We got the message even before he got into office. There's nothing new, really, in the scheme of things that it would be so different from what we already know about Donald Trump. The number one thing we know is that he's not fit. We talked about this.
Okay, so then how do you get the people in the country to realize that he's not fit and get him out of office?
Job.
Don't you think
that's
the job?
The people, and people have to assume some responsibility here. This is a fundamental and critical question about the rights of people in a so-called democratic society. We have a president that some people admire and want him to stay. Some people want him to go. But we have no resolution. We have no argument and debate about it. People just
so
talking.
Who brings the resolution? Who's supposed to put forward the resolution to this problem?
In many ways, including citizens, regular citizens. Look what happened in Puerto Rico. They kicked a governor out of office, sent him packing. They didn't get a vote. They didn't wait for debate. They got to the streets and they said, you have got to go. You and your corrupt administration are out of here. We forget that we have power as well. And we keep deferring to some entity in Congress thinking that that's where the answer is. It's not where the answer is. It's not ever where the answer has been. We are the answer. And I'm waiting to see when people will get to the point of deciding to exercise the power that they have. Instead of being bystanders and you're on the sidelines, you're in it. This is what is most troubling to me about the whole situation. We know how bad the situation is, and yet we're dumbfounded as to what it is we ought to do, as if we have absolutely no idea. There's no other way. We just have to sit and wait until the members of Congress give us permission and send up a signal as though we have no power at all. This is what's frustrating about the situation as it exists. But you got us started today. Thank you so much, Jay, for calling in. Tony from Orlando, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Tony.
You just took the words right out of my mouth when you mentioned Puerto Rico, because you had told Jay that Congress had the power to impeach, not the people. But as you just well stated, that the people in Puerto Rico rose up, and it wasn't an organized rise. It was spontaneous by the public because they just couldn't take it anymore. And they were able to kick out not only the governor, but a lot of his cronies as well, because actually that's how they got him to resign. They put the pressure on the people that were supporting him, and then eventually they all resigned and he was left with no one. I think that's what Nancy Pelosi sees, is that she doesn't have the backing of the public to move forward with impeachment when it comes to this president. And I think that's one of the reasons why she's not moving forward with it. But as Jay was talking about,
The government does not belong to Nancy Pelosi. And Nancy Pelosi is not the be-all and end-all of decision-making.
But she is she's the head of, speaker, the House Speaker. But
Go ahead.
Well, my point is she's the leader of the Democratic Congress right now. She's the leader. She represents. She's the one who calls the shots right now. That's her position. Okay.
With regard to the Democratic Party, but not not all parties.
I understand that, but what? But if someone's going to move forward with impeaching this president, it's first going to come from the Democratic side. And then I guess the Republicans, any of the Republicans that want to join in will join in. But the Democrats, you got to remember, these people live on polls.
I'm sorry, but I want to interrupt to just bring your statement up to date. You may recall on this very program, and I covered it live, when a congressman from Texas, Al Green, put forward his first articles of impeachment.
Yes.
Okay. You remember my comments after the speech?
Yes,
nobody
there was no one
shook
standing
his hand.
Next to him.
Nobody patted him on the back and said, good job. Nobody congratulated him in any way.
Nope. And you know why? And you know why, Utrees? It's because these people on top, I'm not saying Congressman Green, but I'm talking about the Nancy Pelosi's, the Chuck Schumer's, the big dogs, as you might call them. These people do not speak one word or do one thing without analyzing it over 1,000 times. And that was one of the reasons why Hillary Clinton lost, is because they're so robotic in their actions. They're so detached from the public that they
so there's a lot of reasons why Clinton lost, and
I understand.
And one of them
she was
at all a good choice.
She was dirty and all that, but a lot of part of it is that she was a typical robotic politician, and these robotic politicians, they live and breathe polling. Everything is polling, and if the public is not moving and protesting and pushing these politicians in a certain direction, they won't do it. They won't do it.
I'm reading you right. Would it be out of place for people to start what these politicians apparently are unwilling or unable to start, which is to challenge this president?
That's what happened. Utrees, the problem in America, in the United States of America, okay, is that, particularly in the Democratic Party, is that they have spoiled us so much with the bones that they throw at us that we believe that they are going to solve every single problem for us. And we always keep voting
for the same
people.
But that's our fault.
Exactly.
That is their method of surviving in politics. It is our responsibility to help guide the ship. But
We keep voting for the same crooked politicians because they keep throwing the same bones at us and keeping us happy, while everything keeps crumbling around us, and we don't realize it. That's the problem. We put all of our power into these politicians' hands, which is why I understand where you come from when you say you don't want to vote and you gave up on them and all that. I understand that part now. Now that's very very clear to me. But it's because these politicians, they don't serve us. They serve the money that gets them in office. Okay, and unless we out in the streets protesting, rioting, stopping public service, and shaming them in their face at their homes, not the opposition parties. Okay, like if you're a Democrat and there's a Republican president, not saying oh we don't like that Republican president, but how about you, like right now you go after the Democrats because it's up to the Democrat Party
Look at what you're suggesting. You haven't yet discussed what our attitude should be. Yes, be clear about what our attitude should be with the Democrats.
That's it. That's what I'm telling you.
You haven't mentioned independent parties. What about them?
you treat Bernie Sanders proved that there is no independent party. There is no independent party.
All right. So therefore, we
he just burned that mess here. Bernie Sanders burnt the independent party. Okay, when he folded for Hillary Clinton, there is no independent party. And in Puerto Rico, what they're not creating a new party. You know what they're doing? They're destroying all the parties, and they're saying, you know what? You guys, we're destroying you, and they're going to rebuild you again. That's what they're saying. Okay, they're not about saying, oh, we want to create a new party, because you treat it as very difficult to create a third party and all that stuff. What you have to do is you have to destroy the existing parties and threaten them to the point to where they need to check themselves before they wreck themselves. And that's what you have to do.
Unless they face total annihilation, they're not going to accede to the demands of the people. They're not going to do it.
And
they have so much invested in making a living through the process that has existed for decades. That's what they know.
And we keep supporting it.
Sure.
The American people keep supporting it.
My point is, if we agree with where they are, then it's our fault. There's nothing that says we have to agree and go along with Nancy Pelosi, and nobody challenges Nancy Pelosi. And our eyes, as we saw with Al Green, the treatment he got going out there as the first one to send up a signal, Trump, I'm coming for you. They left him completely hanging, twisting in the wind.
Well, the Democratic Party, it does still have some opportunity to reform itself with this new crowd, or what they call them, the group or something like that. With AOC and
the squad,
the so-called squad. So, if the squad, because they're the new face of the Democratic Party, if they can produce some meaningful rallies, sort of copy what Trump does around the country, where he does his little rallies and rile people up. If they were able to do something like that, and get the people motivated at a grassroots level, I think that's something they need to start doing.
Please understand this. They are threatened even now. Their lives are threatened. And because of the stands that they took, whether we agree or don't agree, but the fact is they face death threats every day for the simple fact that they have a different point of view, a different political point of view. And it is unfair to saddle them with the restoration of democracy. That's not their job.
Well,
we won't do our job. We won't vote intelligently. We won't take to task these people publicly. We won't support the ones, again, I go back to Al Green. Now, you don't have to be, totally in his pocket. No, but at the time that he made his move, it was a sensible move. It was a bold move, very much so. And it was not to be tolerated. And they showed that on the very day that he testified. He offered his articles of impeachment not once, but twice. He came back again sometime later and amended his articles of impeachment and got the same reaction. It was dead silence. And people seemed to move away like he had some dreadful disease. So the Democratic Party, we have to consider healthy alternatives to it. Right now, as I said, today the New York Times is making a big deal about it, and the news outlets are making a big deal about it, that they have this special insight that you know, the move for impeachment is pretty much dead. It was dead from the beginning. That's what we were trying to say. It's dead from the beginning.
Utrice, we're in a position right now. Look, if no one supports the Democratic Party, which is basically what they need as a wake-up call, but we're 1 year away from an election that will re-elect Donald Trump and then make him immune to any charges against him after, because I believe there's like a five-year, what do they call that, a five-year limit to charging him or whatnot. So if he was to become president again, then any hope of charging him with any crimes are gone as far as what they investigated him on. So basically, by not supporting the Democratic Party, you're pretty much giving him a pass to become president again. So it's kind of we're kind of in a little pickle right here with this situation.
Well, we've put ourselves there. And we have to examine this whole business again, our own political orientation. What does it mean to be affiliated with any party? What do you believe? What is your duty? What is your obligation? Most Americans opt out. Theoretically, they say, well, I'm Republican, I'm Democrat. Okay, what does that mean? They don't know. But okay, you got into the bad habit of affiliating yourself with a party, but you take no further action. You're uninvolved. And you let things pass that are just repulsive and, in fact, detrimental to what it is you believe you're involved in, which is creating an environment, a democratic environment. But we don't do that. We just talk. We're on the sidelines and uninvolved. Uninvolved.
Exactly.
We really need to look at what happened in Puerto Rico.
And that's why Nancy Pelosi is not moving, because we're uninvolved.
Nancy Pelosi is not moving because the Democratic Party, for many, many reasons, has been established as a plantation system.
Yes.
She's the head of the plantation, and everybody acts accordingly. Nobody moves out of place. Nobody challenges anything. And it's not because she has extraordinary political powers or whatever. She rose through the ranks. She was helped to rise through the ranks. And being there now, she is her own potentate. She guides democracy. She determines the limits of democracy and the meaning of democracy, and we let her. We let her do that.
Yes. Any
so
system
there,
that has
we have
a
to,
position
we have to take what
the
comes
whip.
With it for being uninvolved.
You treat any system that has a position called the whip is a plantation system. They have somebody called the whip that whips up the vote. Now, if our political system is in need of reform, it's way past due. You know, the terminologies, the way the system is designed is just antiquated.
It is not antiquated. You see, this is where we go wrong. It is working perfectly for the people who control it.
Exactly. It works perfectly for them, not for us.
It works perfectly. Which includes our inaction, our indifference. That's part of the whole system. That they're not in charge of creating change. We'll tell you how to vote. We'll tell you when to vote. We'll tell you what to vote for. And there you go. You have democracy. Thanks a lot, Tony, for calling in today. Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Oh, Utrice. All right. How are you today, first of all? How's everyone, anyway? And, you know,
Thank you. I'm doing all right.
When I say that, you know what I mean. I'm not, like, Okay. I'm not trying to get into the personal stuff. I'm just mean. Anyway.
I know. I haven't yet jumped off a bridge. I'm in the process of selection, though. I'm selecting the bridge at the moment. Which one do I really want to jump off of?
Oh, you made my day. Well, that was beautiful. Well, you know,
sense of humor.
Because I remember when you said what you had to say, and I was like, I almost cursed on the air. I was like, really? And then, you know, here you are. So you're here, you know. But I didn't mean it like that. That's what I'm saying. Like, you know. Oh, God, you truth. All right. Look, I just want to build on the callers previous to me, because I'm inspired, and I see a juxtaposition. I'm thinking about Reverend Pinckney, in that what he showed us, what the other side can do as an experiment in terms of, you know, doing what they want to do, taking people's water. You know, when you control water and food, you can control the population. So juxtapose that to what our people are doing in our territory of Puerto Rico, you know, and nothing like an island woman. Okay, I have island people in my family. When I talk like that, I'm not being pejorative, because I know this is my people, and I'm being deadly serious about this. Now, you see what they did. They took to the street, you know, and this is what we have. We can do this. There's a methodology to this. And this is what a critical mass is called. And folks who cannot
maybe
travel.
This is where things are headed, ever so slowly, but it is frustrating. We should have a clearer picture by now of what any and every party should be about. What we should be clear about what they're trying to accomplish. We should be clear about our own personal decisions in terms of agendas match theirs, mm-hmm. or and the other way around, do their agendas match ours? This is a point of reckoning. There's no doubt about it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What more do we need to see? In other words, we see that lawlessness is being condoned to this point. If we don't step up now, there is nothing. So what I'm saying is that everyone does not have the resources to march on the mall in D.C. So this is a grassroots thing. Now, for instance, on Washington Journal this morning, there was a caller, and she had a wonderful idea, and I think this could take off. It has legs, as they say, in a certain industry. A second Saturday, where you don't go out, you don't do this, you don't do that. Let me slow down a little bit, because this is. So you understand what I'm trying to say, and see, this is like, I'm not trying to get academic about this, but there's a methodology to this. You cannot have a couple of people just jumping up and down here and there. There has to be a critical mass. What more do we need to see? So we can start locally. In other words, you live in a little county, whatever, show up at your courthouse, get five people to come with you and say, no, we're not going to take this. And everybody knows there's 6 degrees of separation. Everyone knows, especially people of color, for lots of reasons. Everyone knows someone who lives in the D.C. area that can show up on the mall. But there has to be a concerted effort, a critical mass at a certain date. Because Puerto Rico has shown us, just like Reverend Pinckney showed us what the capitalists and the industrialists can do, we can do the same thing. We have to assert our power. And this is my shout out is to you. because you have been guiding and goading and trying to train people's mind to think about survival for, I would say, since I've been listening to your program, okay, for at least for the past 2 years. And this is exactly what you're talking about. You know, these people are not playing. When I say these people, I mean the industrialists and the capitalists. They don't care about us.
No, they're not playing at all. They're not playing. And we've become lazy. We are spectators in our own demise. You know, we keep waiting. We know how it's going to turn out. We're just mesmerized by the process. And we remain inactive while we observe them implementing the process. This is crazy to me. But maybe we need really harsh conditions to wake us up.
I hope it doesn't take that, you trees. And let me give you a salient example. Is this disgusting individual known, labeled as the Attorney General, he's announced that he's going to start killing people by state-sanctioned murder again.
Yeah, but he can't do it if he didn't have assurances that he won't have any opposition, that he has a certain amount of power that guarantees his right to reinstate the death penalty. You see, this is what I mean. People don't do things to test out how people would react. Mm-hmm. They know already.
Mm-hmm.
The very communities that would be most affected by this will be the ones that would basically not show up for protests, not participate in a campaign. They won't do it.
That's what I'm saying. We like you have been saying, and this is what people love about your program is that you require people to think. You know, you put out the breadcrumbs. You know, it doesn't matter if people have degrees or not. Like, I'm quite sure you have a degree in journalism. I'm quite sure, or English or history or something like that. But
not in journalism.
Okay. You know, but it's not the point. Is that we have the power. We have the power. And I often talk about the party of self-defense because they were educated folk, but they were from the street also. And see, there is a value in having street smarts and academic knowledge. That is an incomparable force, if you understand what I'm saying.
Well, you know, I just hope that we very, very, very soon arrive at a point of commitment to ourselves and our communities. And again, I've been talking about this business of reclaiming and rebuilding communities. I would just like to see one successful cleanup drive. It doesn't have to be grand. Take one block, sweep it clean, and then tell us and show us how beautiful a block can be when it's clean. You would have accomplished something.
Well, but that is what I'm doing.
We are
in my
waiting
community
for other people to do the jobs that really and to take on the responsibilities that belong to us, and we just sit and observe the fray. That's not our role. It really isn't. And
well,
at some point, we have to hold ourselves responsible for what happens where our interests, our collective interests, are concerned. Thanks so much, Khalil, for your call today. Thank you so much. Jean from Maryland, you are on the air.
Hi, Utrice. Thanks very much, and good afternoon to you.
Thank you. To you, too.
So you spent a chunk of the program talking about Nancy Pelosi. And the question came up, you know, what is she doing? And I would suggest that what she is doing is showing us that the fix is in. The next question is, why is she doing it? And I would suggest that it's about the money. Now, you had Charles Ortel on the program a week or so ago, which, you know, every time he joins the program, there's just a dump truck full of information that just backs up and unloads. And one of the things that he touched on in the program was Jeffrey Epstein. And I think it's important that we recognize and remember that Jeffrey Epstein has historically been a major Democratic donor. And so when you look at it with that particular lens, and then ask yourself, what is Nancy Pelosi doing? She recognizes that one of the major bundling sources for these campaigns, that as the speaker, she is responsible to help these Senate and House candidates raise money. She has to realize that that source has dried up. So I'll hold there and listen to your comment.
Well, we talked about Epstein is no news in that sense. He's well known. He's not, he was, although he has been immune to prosecution for a long time, because the problem with Epstein, as far as the organization goes, is that he has ensnared so many people into his web. I did a program called, what was it? Swamps and Sinkholes, talking about corruption and how it works in Washington, D.C. This is a particular, Epstein is part of a network that's been allowed to operate for a long time. And one of the best sources of help he got was from Bill Clinton. A very sick man. And you'd be surprised at the names that will come up when you talk about the activities of Epstein. It would take out a whole bunch of people, just like the Clintons. When you talk, we were talking about their so-called foundation, but people think it's just a foundation. No, it is a matter of billions of dollars being moved from here to there and being used for reasons and purposes not at all sanctioned, but they've gotten away for it for years. They make Bernie Madoff look like an amateur.
I think this is the point that I'm really making, is that Epstein and the Epstein associates, all of that money is now untouchable, which historically, for the Democrats in particular, has been a significant resource for these campaigns. And so when you ask the question, what is Nancy Pelosi doing with respect to these questions of impeachment and why isn't she moving forward? She has to protect the remaining funders who may or may not be willing or may need some cajoling to write these checks. Because the question
is, that's a very simple thing. She has a great deal of power and influence, and she intends to hold on to it. It's a very simple thing, but it is as complicated as it is. It actually is very simple to understand. So at her age, she is now a senior citizen. She has been for some time. And she needs to get her goodies in place before she leaves. It's like Barack Obama. It's about putting together the goodies. He's out of office. It's about bringing to fruition all the deals that they cut, multi-million dollar deals, so that his great-grandchildren don't have to worry. about wealth. This is how they do it. And in the interest of that, they would set aside the interest of millions of people just so that they get done what they need to get done for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is challenging Nancy Pelosi. It's as if she is the repository. She is the only person on the planet who has the wit and the wisdom to rule. Nobody interferes with her. And that is because her people, her power people, protect her. She knows where all of the, you know, the bodies are buried. She knows where their weak spots are. So she has a considerable cudgel that she can wield and cut people down to size if they look like they are threatening her position. But what is instructive to me is that within the Democratic Party has devolved so much with regard to its racial bent. It went all the way back to the days of the Ku Klux Klan.
Sure.
So it's prettied up and tidied up, and you know, they have conferences and they're civilized, but it is a plantation system. Make no mistake about that. And she is the queen of the plantation. And that's what she's going to be until she's either fed up or until she dies.
The reason I bring up Jeffrey Epstein's name this afternoon is there is a range of reporting that is beginning to come out and expose some of the connections that Jeffrey Epstein had and the directions that it goes in. So one of the things that I thought was very interesting was a connection to Charlie Rose that I read an article about earlier today that was pointing out that there was a connection between Charlie Rose, some staff who was hired at the behest of Jeffrey Epstein, with a tangential connection back to, and his name just slipped my mind, the movie producer, Harvey Weinstein.
And yeah, but you know, in the scheme of things, when you talk about the power circles in which these people operated, the people you just named are a bit far down on the totem pole, on the rung of the ladder. I'm talking about connections with heads of state. Not just your Charlie Rose and they're influential, yeah, that's fine. But I'm talking about connections with people who determine what happens in the world on a global level of control.
I don't disagree with you. I agree with you
wholeheartedly. What they use is their sexual predilections, and they have the wealth. They don't have to, apply for passports to go to places and do their thing. They have their own planes. They have access to the intelligence community. It's an amazing thing when you see it unravel, and we're just seeing just the tip of the iceberg.
Well, I think
you'd be surprised at the names that will fall out of this bag if they ever open it. So,
and that's what I'm waiting for. I just think that names like Charlie Rose and others are just the beginning. And I think that we're going to start to see some of these connections to the banks, to global corporations in finance, to pharmaceutical, to weapons manufacturing, and so on. As that stuff begins to get exposed, and I'll leave you with this, as it circles back, to the question of the funding for these House and Senate races in the Democratic Party. And I believe
across the board,
Nancy Pelosi
really. Across the
is
board.
Playing defense.
Democrats and Republicans are the same. All right. Well, thank you very much, Gene. Good to hear from you. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
How are you doing? I just
hello,
want to say,
Willie?
Hello? Are you hearing me?
Yes. Yes.
Hello? Yeah, good afternoon. And I just like to say thank you so much for what your programming. And there's so much I would like to say, but as soon as I get on the phone with you, it's a whole different story. You know, I'm not able to project my ideas the way I want to. But as a student of yours and many others, I'd like to ask you a question. What is the worst thing one human being could do to another?
What is the worst thing a person can do to another?
Evil. The worst evil. We do a lot of evil things to one another. What is the worst of all evil in your mind?
I've never thought about it in that sense, but I now have to think. The worst evil that a person can do to another.
Yes.
You see, that kind of question requires a breakdown first before it could be answered. In what area are we talking about? Is it spiritual? Is it personal? Is it political? Is it social?
Period.
Okay, period.
Period. It consists of political,
I think,
social.
The worst thing one person can do to another, I would venture to say, is deny or deprive that person of his or her humanity.
Okay. Well, a simpler way of putting it, that's correct, in my judgment. I think the worst of all evil one human being could do to another is to take their mind. Because once they take that's what you've been doing every day, is to have us reclaim our minds. That's what you're doing, and that's what Minister Farrakhan and all of those people, like Malcolm X, Martin Luther, all of them, that's why they kill them, because they don't want us thinking. Because if we're thinking, the world is over. Because they do what they have now become the gods of humanity, and that's what has been done. This is why we're caught. I think we're caught up in the mess we're in, because they are the rules of this earth have already taken our mind. You see, because for example, yesterday I was listening to your program, and everything that you've taught me and others, I would never think of dismissing a program that you're doing, because I'm always listening. But you were talking about the impeachment hearings and that kind of thing. And to me, that I see that as, I take an offense to that. Simply because I'm beyond, I have reached a point of understanding exactly what they're doing. That's not none of our business, because that doesn't include us. And not you. What they're doing is making a bigger, I'm not saying I'm not a fool, I'm making a bigger fool out of me. To look to that system. I remember you did a program on systems. So for us to look into that system for our salvation, I would say, you're out of your mind. You complete, because it's the same system that they agree. The parties, they agree, both parties, they agree on crushing particular African people. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, and I don't disagree. But no. I say just the same, that we ought to understand these systems in as much as they will affect us, and most often negatively affect us. We ought to understand them, how they work.
Well, I understand that you, I have to understand. I don't agree, because regardless of whether I understand it, they're going to do the same. Their objective is the same. It's irrelevant whether I understand.
But not necessarily. If you really understand the system, you have a leg up in the race, because you can anticipate their action. You could anticipate reaction, just like yesterday. Now, did I have to go through and listen and wait and hear what was said? No. I could tell you how that system works. So it's, you know, news organizations are now discovering it today. What they're saying publicly is that, you know, it's time, because it's now news, they have to expose the system. And they have to forecast how the system is about to behave. We knew that. We knew that a long time ago.
Yeah, but
we knew that a long time ago.
We are at a very critical, from what I understand, we are at a very critical point in history. And
there has never been a point, especially as it relates to oppressed people, there's never been a point at which we haven't been living through a critical time. Never.
There's total agreement on my part. Now, what my point is, and your point is, what you've been saying from day one, we have to work on our survival, because regardless, yes, and I totally agree with that. That's what the nation is. I know we're going to disagree on that. That's why I don't listen to you. That's what the nation is of Islam has been doing from day one.
Why? That's why you don't listen to me.
You see, as much as you're my teacher, I have to disagree. I know you're going to disagree on that part. That's why I don't listen to you. Let's make that clear. But it's okay not to agree, all right?
That's fine. In fact, I like it when people disagree, because I get excited about the possibility of learning something new.
Okay. Well,
if people disagree and they explain to me what the differing point of view or points of view might be, I'm happy, because I am now being educated. Maybe I didn't know these things before. Or maybe I thought I knew something, but I knew the wrong thing.
Well, listen, from my point of view, none of us listening to you can educate you. You're the epitome of education. That's why we are listening to you. I only do not listen when we disagree. That's all. But
thank you so much for calling. And you bring us to the end of our program today. There are still so many people on the line. We'll catch up somehow next week. Please make an effort, and we'll continue the conversation then. But I thank you for your considered opinions. I thank you for your approach and your conduct on the air. I'm so proud to be in your company. This weekend, surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension to your life, and we see each other on Monday. Bye-bye.
Choo-choo train.